Hello, I'm Jack Candido. It is November 26, 2016, and I'm interviewing my coach, Andy Dardane. So the max amount of minutes for this interview is going to be 45, so don't be afraid to get deep.
Okay.
So my first question is, if you could describe your life until 18 years old, in one word, what would it be?
In one word, I'll say perseverance.
Why would you pick this word?
You know, just because of my upbringing and the things I had to go through, the environment that I was raised in, you had to persevere to make it to the next day. Whether it's, you know, getting meals, whether it's getting drinking water, running water, and whether it's just surviving on a daily basis.
Very interesting. Where did you grow up?
Well, a bunch of different places. I was born in the Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago, which is right off the coast of Venezuela. At the age of 9 and a half, 10, I moved to Boston, which was a huge transition for me. I mean, being born in the Caribbean, which is pretty much laid back and, you know, everyone's friendly, and then moving to a big city, which is cold, is the total opposite end of the spectrum. So from Trinidad, Caribbean to Boston, until I was like a junior in high school, and then we moved to Florida.
What were challenging aspects of growing up in these areas?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, you know, the Caribbean, you know, it has its nice places. That's very beautiful and exotic, and it has the places that the cops don't even want to go to. My mom, she was, just to give you a little back history, she was born and she was very, very, her family was very rich, very wealthy. And my dad was from the bottom of the pit, the lowest of the low, where society looks down on.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom met with my dad because she was rebelling against her parents.
Mm-hmm.
They said to her, don't mess with a guy like that.
Yeah.
So she rebelled against them, and they got together, and that's what made me.
Hmm. What was your relationship with your parents?
Very close, very close. My mom and my dad had my brother, myself, and my sister. My mom left us, my brother and myself, with my dad at the age, I was 5 and my brother was 4. And she came to the States with my sister. And I remember, it was so crazy, that I remember her combing my sister's hair and saying, you know, we're about to go to the States. And I said, man, I said, can we come? And she said, not now. And we were always close and you know, she said she'd be back, and she came back years after. But the thing is, when we were together, my dad, my brother, and myself, that stuff that we've experienced things that grown adults don't experience.
What, like, give me an example.
Time out. like what? I was one of those kids that I was on the side of the street that, you know, you would have to, in the islands, you can go pick your own fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And you would go on the side of the street, and you, when a car pulled up to the light, you try to sell the fruits.
Uh-huh.
To get money to eat.
Yeah.
Sometimes at a young age, you had to gamble to get a dollar or $2 to go buy some cookies or to buy a soda, and that'd be your lunch. And if you got that, you were lucky. If you were able to get money, however you had to get money, and you ended up with 2 quarters, and you try to turn that 2 quarters into $2, and if 50 cents is all you had, and you go and try to gamble with your peers, whether it's cards or dice or whatever, to get $2 to eat, and you lose that 50 cents, then what do? You do it out. You don't eat. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. And then sometimes where I lived at the time where my dad was, with no running water, sometimes you go for days without water. Unless you you walk some good miles to get some water by a standpipe, what we call it, which was a pipe on the side of the road. But we were so poor that I didn't have shoes on my feet. So I would have to walk barefooted. I'd have to walk barefooted, yeah. And then I would carry two big buckets. Mm-hmm. Fill it up and walk up a steep hill. With no shirt on my back. No shoes on my feet. So I can have water to drink for a couple days. And it wasn't filtered water. It was tap water.
All right. What about, like, your siblings? Were you close with them?
Well, very close. Very close. You know, when my mom came to the States, she met someone and she remarried and been with someone for over 30-some years. So the guy she remarried, she had two kids with him, two boys. Mm-hmm. And he had a daughter. So with that, it was six of us. It was my brother, my biological brother, myself, my sister, the two boys, and so it was six of us. So we were really close, but back in the islands, because you had nothing to lean on, all you had was yourself, your siblings. Mm-hmm. So that's what we leaned on.
Wow. In the Caribbean, did you play any sports, or was it just mainly like in high school?
I played soccer.
Really?
Yeah, I played soccer. That wasn't, you know, you either play soccer or cricket. Mm-hmm. Now they're getting into basketball because basketball is really international right now. Mm-hmm. But I played soccer and I was really good at soccer. Mm. You know, which is good because soccer transitions to basketball, which is a sport that I really love right now.
Did sports help you, like, push through the hard aspects of your life?
Yeah, because what sports was, it was a temporary escape of what was happening mm-hmm. in your life at that time.
Yeah.
So during that temporary escape, even though you're not thinking about it, you're still trying to use it as a vehicle to get you out of those areas that's not good, mm-hmm. hoping that someone would see you. You know, someone would see you, and if someone sees you, maybe, you know, you can get funded or whatever, so you can have a better life. Hmm.
Did you get any nicknames when you were growing up?
quite a few. Some of them I can't say. Well, my dad, because of the area he was from, mm-hmm. and I don't blame him, but he was taught a certain way for generations and generations and generations. And, you know, when I look back, people say, well, how could your dad think that way or say that way? Well, that's all he knew, so I can't blame him. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad taught him a certain way. His dad taught him a certain way. His dad taught him a certain way. So because of the area you're from, because of survival skills, you always have to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. So my dad's nickname was Machine Gun Kelly. They call me 45, and they call my brother 9, which is for guns, right?
Yeah.
But that's what the streets call us. But my dad called me, his nickname was my initials, ABD. Mm-hmm. ABD. And that nickname, ABD, is something that stuck with me emotionally. Because I left him at such a young age, when I was 9 or 10. And when we left, my mom had came back to the islands, and she said, hey, you know, you want to go to the States? And we're like, yeah, can we come back when we want to? She's like, yeah. So we left. My brother and I left without telling our dad. Mm. And I could just imagine what a blow that was, because first his wife left, and his daughter left together, and then both his sons left, leaving him with no one behind. Mm-hmm. So the name ABD, because he gave it to me, it always stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Kind of already went over that. Did you get into, like, any, like, fights when you were in these areas?
All the time. Yeah. You had to. Even if you... It's like, you fight not because you want to, but sometimes you fight because you have to. Mm-hmm. You know, you might fight over the stupidest things. You know, I remember we didn't have showers. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you collect the water to take shower, you would warm the water up in a kettle, and you pour the kettle of warm water in cold water. Mm-hmm. And that's easy. Then you take a cup, you stick it in, you switch the water around, make it warm, take a cup, pour it on yourself. And one instance I remember, I was taking out you outside, and you're taking a shower. So I'm pouring water on myself. Not shower, but you're pouring the water on yourself. And this dude, he's dead right now. You know, like a lot of my friends who no longer is here, but he just started picking some big rocks up and throwing it at me. Mm-hmm. When I was bathing myself, and I couldn't take it. And, you know, because of the area I was from, I used to have a bad temper. And this one time I got so angry that my dad, he came right when something was about to happen, and I passed out in his hands, in his arms, mm-hmm. because I was so angry.
Yeah.
Other times I fought in school. Fighting was like I probably fought more than I ate. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have food. Mm-hmm. So I would you ever so hungry that you have an attitude?
Yeah.
Like, you just fight because you're hungry and there's nothing else to do, and you're trying to escape your problems. And so you do it just because it's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, and I always tell people, you know, you no one really wins in a fight. They hit you, you hit them, And, you know, at the end of the day, that fight is never done. Because years after, if you forget about it, and that person doesn't forget about it, and they catch you somewhere, and they sneak up on you with your friend, with their friends, you never know what could happen. Mm-hmm. And then you hit somebody, and they fall and hit their head, and they're dead, and then you go to jail for life. So, you know, as you get older, you just look at things differently. I can't say if I was to do it again, if I'd have done it differently, because honestly, the experiences that I went through is what molded me into the individual that I am today.
Hmm. What was, like, your happiest memory through all this?
Being alive still. I could count on all of my fingers and all of my toes the friends that I had that died. And then when I go back to see my dad in that area and the friends who are alive still, it makes me feel good because I give them hope. Because I remember, I go back once a year and I take my family to see where I'm from. And surprisingly, my son, you know, he loves the area I'm from. Mm-hmm. And when I go back there, I'm like, they lift me up, they look up. Like, if I'm outside and they see me on the street, cars driving by, they stop, they make U-turns, they all come around. And the bad guys, who people don't really go around, they there's like a big wall around us where they put their people around us that nobody could come next to us. Mm-hmm. Because I got out. Mm-hmm. And I give them hope, and I tell people, I said, look, I remember telling this group of guys, I said, I am you and you are me.
Yeah.
In other words, I've been where you are. I understand what you're thinking. I understand what you're going through. But understand that you can look at me and come out of this environment. You don't have to die. You don't have to kill. You don't have to steal. Mm-hmm. There is hope. As long as you're breathing, there is hope.
Yeah. So I know, like, why you, like, went to Boston, of course. Why did you choose to Florida? Or did you, like, not have a choice to go?
I didn't have a choice to move to Orlando, Florida. Ending a junior year of high school, I played sports in high school. I played mm-hmm. football, I played basketball. I was a team captain, I was very good at it. And I moved my junior year of high school to Orlando, Florida. My parents were living in a an apartment, and they purchased a house in Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Orlando, Florida, I rebelled. The reason I rebelled is because I left all my friends
mm-hmm.
that I played sports with from the time I was moved to the States until a junior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I excelled at it, so I wanted to be with those guys. And so my parents said, hey, we bought a house, we got to leave. I said, well, it's my junior year, I don't want to go. So when we moved to Orlando, I just quit playing sports. I quit everything, and they wanted me to play for the school that I moved to, but I said no. I just wanted to graduate and move back to Boston because Boston was my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I knew a lot of people. A lot of people knew me. They knew my brother because we played sports. We were the school, you know. My brother, it was my brother and I at the time, my brother was in 11th grade and I was in the 12th grade. And when we went to that school, people gravitated towards us,
mm-hmm.
Even though we didn't play sports. And it was a bad school.
Yeah.
It was a bad school. They had riots in that school. They had cops in that school. And I remember it was on the news because some stuff had happened that when we had first moved, when you're new to the area and you're new to a school and it's a public school, people who don't know who you are, so they want to sometimes test who you are.
Yeah.
And some guys came to my door and they knocked on the door and they said something to my brother. And I remember we were sleeping. And we both jumped out, went outside, and then something happened in school the next day because they approached my brother. And when the guys found out that they were approaching my brother and I, there was a riot in the school where the cops came in and they had us in the room, and they said, "Hey, you guys can stop this. You guys can stop the riot, but you guys have to tell this person and that person to stop doing this." Mm-hmm. I mean, there were fights and fights and fights. It was between different ethnicities. It was just really bad. So when I first moved to Orlando, it was not a good experience.
Yeah.
But eventually, it transitioned into a beautiful experience for me because I started meeting the right people.
Yeah.
I started changing the way I thought about Orlando. I got really comfortable. I met somebody,
mm-hmm.
a young lady, and it made me want to be there. It made me want to be there. And then in Orlando, you know, I ended up, you know, finishing high school and going to college, get my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there. My mom had a couple of surgeries, took care of her, and then moved to LA.
Was it hard when you first moved to LA?
Very hard.
Yeah.
And that's the understatement. Because I never been to LA before.
Mm-hmm.
I hopped in a U-Haul from Florida.
Yeah.
Drove across the country. And that was some life lessons. Because what happened was, in Orlando, Florida, I started acting in Boston. Then in Orlando, it really, really started picking up a lot with commercials and so forth. So I said, you know what? Let me go to the bigger market, which is L.A. I was shooting a commercial in Orlando, Florida, and I met this guy, and he ended up being a very good friend of mine. But his past wasn't the best past.
Mm-hmm.
As far as his family and so forth, they've been in and out of prison. So I was like a good role model for him. So he found out I was coming to L.A., and he wanted to come to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, you know, tell you what, I'll give you about 5 months roughly to save up some money, and then you can come with me. So 5 months came. I had money saved up. We went to get the U-Haul. And when we went to get the U-Haul, the guy was like, oh, my God, I don't have my money on me. That's weird. I said, okay, I'll pay for it. But you reimburse me. Say, okay, I'll reimburse you. So we got in the U-Haul, and we drove across the country from Florida in the U-Haul. The U-Haul was probably going the fastest it can go, like 65, 70 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So drive across from Florida to here, it took about 4.5 days. Yeah. He slept 95% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
We stopped off in Texas at Riverwalk, which is a great place, and spent the night. And then ended up out here. When we came out here and it was time to make a deposit on the hotel, on the apartment, he said, oh, guess what? I forgot my wallet. So I had to pay the first month and the last month's rent all by myself, which was like almost $6,000.
Damn.
And I didn't know anyone out here at all. I had an uncle who worked for Paramount for 30-some years, but I never met him.
Mm-hmm.
It was uncle through marriage. So we went and got the apartment, And then I found out that he couldn't work. Why couldn't he work? He had a warrant out of his arrest.
Ugh.
So here I am living with someone who has a warrant out for his arrest, who's never been to California in his life. So what do I do? This is someone I knew. So he couldn't work. So I was paying the rent, and then I was paying, and then my part, my money dwindled down. And then the apartment manager said to me, "How come you're with this guy? That's not you. That's not you." And I would buy groceries, and he would have people knocking on the door 2-3 in the morning. And at that time, money was running out, so I got a job. And I had to be at work around 5 in the morning, so I wouldn't sleep. And then people would come in, and they'll go and take the groceries, eat the groceries out, his friends, but he wasn't contributing.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day we got a 3-day eviction notice. On the third day, he gave it to me. He's like, "Look, I'm going to go get the money." Well, you know, on a 3-day eviction notice, on the third day, when you get it, you have to pay then and there, or you're out.
Yeah.
He disappeared. So I'm like, where is he? Next thing you know, he claimed that he was arrested in, like, either Arizona or Vegas or something like that. Now, when you're arrested, you're allowed one phone call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, why didn't you call me, right? Because you don't have any family out here. So the way we met, bumped into each other after he got arrested, is that one day we bumped into the hallway because he was trying to turn the key and I had changed the locks.
Yeah.
And he explained the situation and stupid me. I said, "Okay, I'm going to give you another shot." The next month he had his half of the rent. The month after that he did not have his half. I said, "Tell you what, I'm going to pay for you to stay for this much longer, but I'm moving my stuff out."
Mm-hmm.
He said, okay, he didn't think I was serious, so I moved my stuff out, and I called, and I said, "Hey, you know what, I don't really have to talk to you in person, I can talk to you on the phone, but I'm going to come meet you face-to-face so we can talk, because, you know, that's just the kind of person I am."
Mm-hmm.
So we met face-to-face, and he was like, "You know what, I hear what you're saying, but nah, you can't leave me by myself." I'm like, "I'm leaving you, I already paid this money for you."
Mm-hmm.
"You're good for this amount of time, but then afterwards you gotta find your own place to stay." If that was the case, I could have brought my wife and son up here at the time and have them stay with me and have to take care of another grown man, right? So he's like, "Okay." So I left. Next thing you know, some people who knew him said to me, "How could I leave him stranded?" So now he's back in Florida. And so the transition was tough with that, you know, mm-hmm. coming to L.A. But now it was all worth it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So out of all this, like, these negative, like, things happening to you, how did you become, like, such a positive person, like, overall, like, now?
You ever hear the saying, you can look at a concrete, like a concrete walkway, and it's nice and smooth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you see a little crack in the concrete, and there's a little flower or little thing that's growing out of the crack in that concrete.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what my life is like. You know, regardless of what happened, I always wanted to give back. I always wanted to help, because when you go through something and you come out of it, you want to help the people that's going through it or might go through it, and make sure that they don't go through the same obstacles, the same experiences that you've had. Even though they say experience is the best teacher, it's kind of like if you're about to walk over a cliff, and I know there's a cliff over there, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, "Jack, don't go there because there's a cliff there. Mm-hmm. Go this way." Because I've been where that cliff is.
Yeah. What made you want to be a coach?
What made me want to be a coach? That's a good one. Because I never envisioned myself being a coach. I really didn't. But what happened was, my son, he plays basketball at he used to play at the local park and rec. And when my wife and my son moved out here, she signed him up. And they needed one more coach for one more team. And I said, "Nah, I don't want to do it, you know, because of the acting, if I book a job and stuff like that." And and I commit to these boys, then I'm obligated to be there for these boys.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe, like, you know, there's a saying that my dad taught me. Your word is your breath, and your breath is your life.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you say you're going to do something, you have to fulfill that. You cannot go back on your word, because your word is all you have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I didn't want to commit and disappoint them, but it ended up being a coach for the team that was called the Boston Celtics. I know nobody liked the Boston Celtics, but I was raised in Boston. So I was like, is this a coincidence? So then I ended up doing it. So through that, the team started having success at the park. And then other parents wanted their kids on my team. But you can only have 10 people on a team at once. And then they started going to the office complaining, we want to be on Andy's team, we want to be on Andy's team. And they said they couldn't do it because, again, only 10 people could be on the team at once.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, people started coming up to me and say, hey, you know, can you train my son? And I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. You know. Mm-hmm. And then my personal friends started coming up to me and say, hey, train my kids. And I'm like, no. And then they would say to me, well, come on, we're friends. You know, I would do it for you if you wanted me to do something for your son. And then I said, okay. So I started with one and two, and then it really snowballed into something that's really, really major. And I love seeing the my reward is when I see success, or the success that these players or these younger kids are having on the court. You know, because sports transitions into life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you first trained me, what was going through your mind?
When I first met you and first trained you, I was excited because I saw a lot of potential in you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I believed in you after the first practice. I said, you know what? He could be something because he's aggressive and he wants to get better. And the thing is, I believe that when anybody wants to get better and they want to do something, the only person who can stop them is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And with you, you've always wanted to be better. You always wanted to be great, and you always put in the work. So that alone to me was motivation to want to keep doing it, to want to keep helping you because I saw something there.
Yeah. After coaching at the park and private training, what inspired you to start your travel team?
Three people. Jack Candido, Jonah Shawman, Zachary Dardain. Those three things. Now, did I anticipate it being this demanding? No. But the thing is, I wanted to make sure that you three was guided in the right way, the right direction. Because there's a lot of programs out there that they just start a program up and they say, you know what? I can do this because this person is doing it, but they're not being taught the correct way. And, you know, it's so funny because with us, I don't look at our program as a basketball travel team.
Mm-hmm.
I look at our program as a basketball travel club.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sense of belonging.
Yeah.
It's a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say team, when someone says team, it's just one team. We started with two teams, and now we've grown into 10 teams, you know? So if you take all of them and put it under the umbrella, I look at us as a travel club that cares about each single individual that's within our program and their families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more than just the basketball. It's more like a relationship more than anything else. It's like if you look outside and you see a tree, and that tree has branches, and on those branches there are leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that tree is the program.
Yeah.
And each branch is the parent and the leaves are the players.
Yeah. This travel team has really boosted your street cred as a coach. And I know, like, losing at first must have been pretty hard, but what pushed you to keep building your teams into the powerhouses they are today?
Well, you know, the looks on the players' faces when we didn't accomplish the goals that we wanted to accomplish. You know, sometimes, you know, people look at the scoreboard and say, well, you know, this is a win and this is a loss based off of the reflection of what the results of the game is. But to me, if you're getting better and if you're growing and if you're developing, you're winning. So on the scoreboard, we might have been losing. But if you look back now and you look at where we are now from where we were, we weren't actually losing. We was actually winning because we developed into something that we are today. Hmm. Which is a huge program.
Yeah.
You know? It was tough. If you want to base the losses off of the scoreboard when we were starting, it was tough. Oh, my God. Like, it was tough. But now, the reward is so much greater than the losses of the scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what I look at. You know, you always look at what's the reward. You don't look at the now. You look at the future. Yeah. You know, and even if you swing at a bat, you swing a bat at a ball, you know, in baseball, and say, you know, you might not hit a grandstand right away. You might not hit a homer eventually right away. You might not even hit the ball when you first started with baseball. And I'm not a big baseball fan, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, but eventually, if you swing at that ball, eventually you're going to connect and you're going to hit.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't look at missed opportunities or failures or anything as or whatever as if it's bad. I look at everything as part of growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The last question is...
That was quick.
The last question is, when you were in the Caribbean,
mm-hmm.
did you ever picture yourself being this successful?
No, because in the Caribbean, it was a day by day thing. Mm-hmm. It was an hour by hour thing. You didn't know if you was gonna survive the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know what the next minute, the next hour, the next day, the next week, the next month, the next year. You didn't know if you would last that long. A lot of my friends don't live past 15. Didn't live past 15. A lot of my friends died a lot younger than that. A lot of my friends committed suicide because he wasn't strong-minded enough. A lot of my friends thought... I had friends who... I don't want to get too dark, and you know, but a lot of my friends did stuff that they're no longer here. And because they had no hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had no hope, And my hope was just to be better.
Mm-hmm.
To not be another statistic. And I truly believe that, and I'm thankful to my mom because if she didn't take me out of that environment, I might not be here today. I wouldn't be here today, you know?
Yeah.
I would have. So, you saved my life by getting me out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You're my brothers.
Yeah.
Even though through the whole process, it was a lot of pain because we left our dad.
Mm-hmm.
And I still talk to my dad, and he has his issues, you know, with substance abuse and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Alcoholic and drug addict. But I go back to give him hope.
Mm-hmm.
And then he plays with, you know, his grandkids and stuff, and they have a great relationship. But, you know, like I said, no regrets.
Mm-hmm.
I reflect at times. And, you know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, Andy, you're successful. Whether it's in the Caribbean, whether it's in Boston, whether it's Florida. They say, hey, Andy, you're successful. But I don't think anybody ever reaches success until their last day. Because there's always room for betterment.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like when you settle, if you say you're successful, that means like you've plateaued, you know, in society's eyes, I guess, you know, they would say I'm successful, but I'm always trying to reinvent myself. I'm always trying to be better because my goal for success is not for me. It's for my family. It's for the people who can't afford a meal. It's for the people who can't afford shoes. It's for the people who can't afford anything for me to go back. When I go back to the Caribbean, I give back to people. I give people clothes. I give them shoes. I buy food for people who I don't even know on the street.
Mm-hmm.
The hotel we stayed in, people from my area who don't even have water and food, I took them into this 5-star hotel. And at first, it was so embarrassed to even walk through the door. They said to me, I mean, my best friend down there, who lost his ear, one of his ear because of me, by the way. And that's another story. He lost one of his ear because of me. Because he used to look out for my brother and myself. And he lost one of his ear because of... But his wife was so embarrassed to come into this 5-star hotel. When she called, she said, are we allowed to go in there? I said, yeah, why not? And then I had my cousins came, and they were in this big hotel, and they're like, oh, my God, like, I can't believe we're here. And my cousin, one of my cousins said to me, you gave us a memory that we may never have for the rest of our lives. And that's why I did it. Because people like that aren't supposed to be in places like this. Mm-hmm. And you should have seen the look on the bellhopper's face when he had to open the door for people like this. You should have seen the look of the people up front at the front desk. Mm-hmm. When, now, they were well behaved, of course, because they you know, they came to see me, my family and my friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of their lives, they will never forget that they got to go to a 5-star hotel and be in a room and be served. I actually got this room that's a presidential suite.
Yeah.
Like, Barack Obama stayed in that room when he went to Trinidad. Yeah. And you can't get a room like that, but because we've been going there for so long, we have a relationship with the people who runs the hotel, the people who owns the hotel. So the people who works there can't even get that room. And we got it, and I had everyone came. And they would serve, they had food serving for them, they can go in the refrigerator and they get it. It's unlimited drinks, you know, whether it's regular juice or water or beer or whatever, and they got that experience.
Yeah.
And up until today, they still talk about it. So every time I go back there, I make sure that I give back.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what life is about, giving back and helping people who don't have, they don't have that chance, and you want to give people hope. If anything else, you want to give them hope to keep living. Because that's all you have, right? Once you stop breathing, it's done. You're done. So you want to make sure that you give them hope. So, you know, I like giving people hope. I like giving, whether it's kids, whether it's the teenagers, whether it's adults. I like doing that because the greatest feeling for me, like, for example, one of my best feelings is when I found out you made the varsity team. That's why I do it, because of that. That made me feel so proud. Like, I hit the lottery because you accomplished something. And I remember you said, I said, look, when we first started training, I said, Jack, I want you to make varsity your freshman year. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I like, it's going to happen. He's like, I like, it's going to happen. And when I found out, I knew you was going to make it, first of all. But when it was official, the feeling I had was worse, cannot even explain it. I feel like, you don't know what Star Trek is or anything like that. You know when they go to another planet and they have their own language? Like, they can't explain it? That's how I felt when I found out you. So that's why I do it. That's my reward. So all the hard work I put in, everything I do, like, you know, with the program, we're busy 7 days a week.
Yeah.
In the nighttime, I mean, I'm constantly getting emails and texts and stuff. I'm lucky if I get 2 to 3 hours sleep a night. And when I hear stories like your story, you forget the times you don't sleep.
Yeah.
You forget the times that you're working 7 days a week. Yeah. You forget the times where I love watching NFL football. I have the package. I can't even watch the package because you know, first game can start with 10 teams. First game can start at 9 a.m. every hour in the hour. Last game started at 9 a.m., 9 p.m., finished at 10 o'clock. So you're there for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So, that's the reward. You know, the reward is people like you seeing your success. And then once you guys succeed, it's all worth it to me.
That was so good. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Oh, that was so good.
Can I hear some of it?